Hare Krishna. Are you all reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Good, thank you. I'm asking that, well, one reason is that if we are to be benedicted with Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we should read his books. Another thing is that this evening I was asked to speak on Bhakti Siddhanta. We should never speak anything but Bhakti Siddhanta. But particularly the personage of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is a highly elevated topic. Now, if we think we're going to speak on elevated topics, we'll think maybe we're going to speak about the glories of Srimati Radharani, Krishna's Gopi Leela. These are certainly very elevated topics. Bhagavad Gita is the first instruction of Bhagavad Gita, a very elevated topic. If we go in the street and hear what people are talking about, they're not talking about this. So all the topics we speak on Prabhupada has given us and that we speak on, these are certainly very elevated topics compared to the humdrum topics of people who have no interest in Atma-tattva, knowledge of the soul. Parabhavastavad-abodhajata-yavanna-jignyasata-atma-tattva. Rishabhdev Bhagavan says that as long as we do not inquire into the nature of the soul and of reality, then everything we do is simply results in our defeat. So there are various elevated topics, beginning with the nature of the soul. Then, after inquiring into such subjects for many lifetimes, then possibly Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Mang Prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. Someone may surrender to Krishna after many births of investigating topics of the soul. They may surrender to Krishna. Such a great soul is very rare. They actually understand that Krishna is all in all. But even then Krishna's various leelas, Vraja Leela, Radha Tattva, and these are progressively higher topics. But the highest topic is that of Krishna's devotee, the highest tattva. Krishna himself says that, what is that? Natata me priyatama, atma yonaya na shankara, nacha sankar shano na shriya, naiva atma chayatha bhavan. Krishna speaking to Uddhava, after giving so much instructions on how he, Krishna, is supreme, said to Uddhava that none of these are as dear to me. And he gives a list. Neither Nachatame Priyatama Atma Brahma, who is born from my very body. Natatame Priyatama Atma Shankara, who is non-different from Krishna in many ways. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. Nor Krishna's own brother Balaram, nor even Lakshmi, who always resides on the chest of Vishnu, none of them are as dear to me. Krishna says, then you, Uddhava. He was going to say, then my devotee, but he said, you are more dear to me. So who can understand the devotee? I remember to this day, some 30-something years ago, reading in Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, in the beginning, Prabhupada writes, he's presenting Rupa Goswami's conclusion that no one is greater than God. That's an axiomatic statement. But greater even than God is love of God, because by that Krishna is controlled. So I remember reading that. It's greater than God. Any theological tradition other than Gaudiya Vaishnavism would consider the statement that anything could be greater than God to be blasphemous. So greater than God is love of God. So who has love of God is greater than God. So it's a very high topic. Bhakti Siddhanta. The topic today is Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vedanta. Lessons in the guru-disciple relationship. These are very difficult topics which we can approach crawling. Not standing up very proudly. I will tell you all about this. Not like that. We can approach with our head down. Who are we to discuss such persons as Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada? Such exalted persons that Saraswati Thakur's own disciples, they ascertained that such a devotee, even in a day of Brahma, such personages as Saraswati Thakur, there hardly two or three will appear. So they are both of the same caliber, Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vedanta. The names are almost synonymous. And actually the name in this case is not just, well, these are actually officially titles, Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vedanta, they're titles. But they are not different from the person. Anyone may have any name. If you give a name to your child, you give some name, Keshava, Krishna. Give some name like this. But it doesn't mean that they are Keshava or Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. Your child may be all attractive to you, but not to everyone. So they're not actually Krishna. But Bhakti Siddhanta, he is Bhakti Siddhanta. Everything. His breath, every hair follicle of his body, every thought is Bhakti Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta means that Bhakti is the Siddhanta. The conclusion of all knowledge is that we should surrender to Krishna. And beyond, love beyond surrender, that's another title. But beyond surrender, this in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, this idea, you do bhakti and that leads up to prapatti. Bhakti leads to surrender. But in Gaudiya Sampradaya, say surrender, that's the beginning. That's only the beginning. After that, the bhakti develops more and more. So, the ultimate conclusion is bhakti. And what are the teachings of, what is the actual understanding of bhakti? So that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati gives, and Bhakti Vedanta gives, and all those who are following should give this and nothing else. That's why I said, we only have to speak on Bhakti Siddhanta. Every day, every moment. Bhakti Vedanta is non-different. Same meaning. So, by the interaction, dealings, teachings of these two tremendous spiritual personalities, we can, as they are in the relationship of guru and disciple, we also, who have to be disciples, if we are at all to approach them, can understand what it means to be a disciple. We are also to be gurus. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered, Jare Deko Tare Koha. Krishna Upadesh, Amaragyai Guru Hoya Taro Edesh. No one should think of himself as a guru. Everyone should think, to be a disciple. But if one is to be a disciple, then he also has to be a guru, because that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order. One may think, I am unqualified, but the order is there that we should teach this message, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Krishna consciousness. So, by seeing how the ideal disciple is the ideal guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the ideal disciple, we may wonder, what is Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, what's he doing there? What did he do? This one book which I happened to produce in the course of doing research into the teachings and pastimes of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I came across information, for want of a better word, about Vanshidas Babaji. And then I made one small book about that. I presented that to one Indian businessman in Dubai. And he looked at the picture and saw this figure of a bearded person looking crazy. And he said, well, who is he? What did he do? I said, what did he do? What are you going to tell Vanshidas Babaji did? What did he do? You know, how many companies did he open? And what did he do? People want to know, what did he do? He loved Krishna. And that was my answer. The businessman was not content. He wanted to know, what did he do? So similarly, Gaurakishore, what did he do? He loved Krishna. Apart from that, he initiated Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now that in itself is more than any of us are ever likely to do. Who could initiate him? Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to Gaurakishore. You become initiated by him. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he stated that prior to seeing the character of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, I had thought that the descriptions of bhakti given in Shastra, they're not practical. That how could anyone actually attain that state? Only when I saw Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj could I understand that this was possible. So it wasn't just that he, as a formality, he took initiation, but his whole spiritual life went through, even though he was raised by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but his whole spiritual life, he described, he went through a revolution by contact with Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He stated that I was known as a fierce debater in my youth. I was highly intellectual. I was known as a very moral person. So Saraswati Thakur described about himself that he himself had a high opinion about himself. And everyone respected me for all these qualities: highly intelligent, highly learned, fierce debater, highly moral person. But when I came in contact with Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, I saw that he didn't care for any of this. And from his not caring about this, I could understand that what he had was so much more valuable than what I had and what I value and all the world values. Then he surrendered to Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he is guru in the full sense of the term. Guru means heavy. There's absolutely nothing laghu or light in the character of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was not an acharya in the traditional sense of the term, that he made disciples, trained them. He would reject almost anybody who did come to him to be a disciple, unless they were on the standard of perfection, practically. He wouldn't accept them. He just rejected them all. So he, in that sense, he was extremely heavy. Who can bear the weight of a guru? The only person in the world who could bear the weight of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. No other could bear his weight. It's too heavy. That if Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj's demand is, you want to do bhakti? Okay, you be like me. That's all. Immediately, you be like me. It's just totally renounced. Practically not eating, not sleeping, absolutely no interest in anyone of this world. You would simply, anyone come to him, you just, all right, you be like me, that's all. One time the Maharaj of Koshim Bazar, this Nandi, Bahadur, what's his name? Rai Bahadur Nandi came. And he was begging Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, come to my palace, come. Sanctify my home, sanctify my kingdom. So I need your association. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said that, well, if I go there, I might become attracted to all the wealth, and I might want to have it, and I might become your competitor. So I've got another suggestion. That you want my association, okay? So you just stay here. You don't go back. You just come and stay and live with me. So like this, of course the Maharaj didn't stay. But he was extraordinarily heavy. We don't think of him as an ideal guru, but an ideal guru, because he didn't like that. He didn't have an institution, he didn't have followers, but he was guru in the full sense that he was extremely heavy. And the only person who could bear that weight was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So he was so heavy. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so heavy that in intenseness of being a guru, but being, or being guru, not a guru, but being guru, being heavy. But he also made some provision. Saraswati Thakur made some provision that people can come to him, and although he did not relax his heaviness, but he gave them some system by which they could come to the level that Saraswati Thakur was on. So Saraswati Thakur himself was an ideal disciple. His two gurus, Gaurakishore and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is everything. Actually, this book, Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, I made one book, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, which is why I was asked to speak on Bhaktisiddhanta, probably. I presume that's... But that book, although it's quite a big book in three volumes, it's introductory. Anyway, it's only introductory to the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although it's substantial, no doubt. Anyone who reads that book will understand it's... It's not just a collection of anecdotes to read something to fall asleep at night. You won't fall asleep. You may not fall asleep ever. He's so shocking. But it's only introductory. And another way that it's only introductory is that to understand Bhaktisiddhanta, we have to understand Bhaktivinoda. Because he is, Bhaktisiddhanta is fully made up of Bhaktivinoda. He's, everything he says, does, teaches, it's all Bhaktivinoda. So really, we have to understand. And how will we understand all this? How, that we can understand through Bhaktivedanta, the ideal disciple. From the very beginning, there was an immediate bonding between Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivedanta. Very beginning means, as we know, Srila Prabhupada was raised in a Vaishnava family. But he had relaxed his practices in college life. He first went to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati reluctantly. And Saraswati Thakur, when he first saw at that time Abhay Charande, a young man, newly married, he said to him, "You're a young man. You should preach the message of Lord Chaitanya all over the world immediately." Which he eventually did. Now at that time, Abhay, he was also Abhay, fearless. So he didn't take the proposition of Saraswati Thakur very easily. He didn't just accept it. He could have just said yes, yes, yes and given lip service and forgotten all about it. But he protested. First of all, when you first meet someone without being introduced or anything, you don't give them some instruction to change their whole life. It's not the normal etiquette. But Abhay, he protested. That, you see, why are you saying this? India is now a bonded nation. We are under the control of the British. We have to kick out the British, then we can think about all these things. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's answer was that Krishna consciousness is so urgent, it cannot wait for any political adjustment. And Abhay felt himself defeated. He'd never been defeated, ever, in discussion. And he never was ever again, this one time, but that he accepted, and he immediately accepted, "This is my guru." So immediately there was an exchange by which Abhay came in the line of Bhakti Siddhanta. He accepted that, and from the very beginning, Abhay, as he was known at that time, he was not a superficial person. He didn't go to a guru just for some blessings. "Give me some blessings." But he immediately recognized that this is a guru. Guru also means, heavy means teacher. They were both teachers. They weren't pat on the head and give a blessing, gurus. They were teachers. Heavy. To change people's lives. The great devotees, they come into this world and they represent Krishna by telling everyone that, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "I go everywhere and I tell people you are all foolish." That is the job, that is the task of a preacher, to inform everyone that their life is foolish. Generally everyone likes to think, "I am very intelligent." But the guru, who is very heavy, informs everyone that you are very foolish. As much as you do not surrender to Krishna, you are very foolish. So Srila Prabhupada was a teacher, always teaching, not simply blessing, not simply speaking in a manner to entertain others, but speaking in a manner by which people could actually be benefited. What is beneficial is rarely relishable, or certainly not entertaining to the conditioned soul. So those who are actually gurus, they're teachers, they teach what people need to hear, not what they want to hear. They don't address the false ego of people, but they speak to break that false ego. As Saraswati Thakur would often quote from Srimad Bhagavatam that Santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. Tatodu Sangamud Srija. Tatodu Sangamud Srija. And then the next line is Satsu sajeta buddhiman. Yes. So, that an intelligent person, he approaches saintly people, sadhus. One has to be intelligent. What is the beginning of intelligence? To understand, I know nothing. Or whatever I know is all wrong. And such a person can approach a sadhu who by his words will cut the material attachments by which we are bound to this material world. So they are both teachers, preachers, wanting to change people's way of thinking. The way we are thinking is all wrong. This they want, and they wanted to give us the right way of thinking. Even if we are thinking about Krishna, which Krishna teaches us in Bhagavad Gita, we should speak of him. Even it may be many times that what we are thinking of Krishna, but not thinking in the way that we should think of Krishna. So bhakti siddhanta means, first of all, the siddhanta, the proper understanding is to come to bhakti, to devotion to Krishna, but then how to understand bhakti also. So Saraswati Thakur would many times make statements which would just turn someone who's in bhakti, just turn our whole way of thinking on its head and wonder what's going on here. Just like, for instance, he would say that in the Satya Yuga, Hiranyakashipu, more than Prahlad, declared the glories of Nrisimhadev. Does that make any sense? Hiranyakashipu, more than Prahlad. I gave some examples in that book when the Dewan of Bharatpur, means the big figure, in the major figure in the government of Bharatpur state, with his whole family, he was doing Dandavat Parikrama, bowing down and circumambulating around Radha Kunda. So Saraswati Thakur was there at the time, and one of Saraswati Thakur was actually his almost first disciple who stayed with him throughout his life, almost all his life. He came and excitedly said, you see such a big man, he is performing Dandavat Parikrama, showing great respect to Radha Kunda. So he's very excited that such a big man was doing that. And Saraswati Thakur said, yes, that's good, but he's respecting Radha Kunda, but not in the way that we respect. He's respecting Radha because of her connection with Krishna. But we respect Krishna because of his connection with Radha. So like this, always. Whatever we think, he will take it, turn it inside out, tumble it upside down, and so bring us to a higher platform of understanding. So the acharyas, they go against the current of the world, because the current of the world is, even if we come in contact with Krishna, to take Krishna and reconvert Krishna back into something that we can exploit for our sense gratification. That Krishna is the supreme controller, okay, so all right, let him do something. I'm his devotee, so Krishna should provide for my sense gratification. This is a common term. Actually, many of the examples and terms that Srila Prabhupada gave, they're taken from Saraswati Thakur. He would say that materialistic people, they want to use God as a supplier of fuel for the blazing fire of their sense gratification. We should not make God an order supplier. Bring some more fuel, throw it in the fire. In other words, provide me with sense gratification. So what does it mean to surrender? Utter surrender. Both Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vedanta, they spoke this. Utter surrender to Krishna. Their aim was the same. Now, Saraswati Thakur, he spoke in a very complex, actually it appears to be a very complex style. those of you who have studied the Brahma Samhita commentary in English may know. Those of you who read Bengali, I don't think there's any Bengalis here. I see he's wearing the shaka. Apni Bengali. But the Bengalis, you could take any Bengali and read one line from his writings. They won't understand. They'll be lost on the first word, probably. He would use all kinds of terms, just like Ashata Bilasha Chatur, which if you... I mean, anyone who knows any basic Sanskrit can understand the meanings of the word, but when you put them all together and the implications of it all, I mean, you could write one book just explaining one word in one of his sentences. He puts all the different things, different terms together. So his writings are just so packed with meaning that one sentence, you could spend your whole life just trying to understand one sentence. It's really extremely rich style. And Srila Prabhupada gave exactly the same thing, but in a relatively simple style. The presentation is simple. The truth is the same, but the presentation is simple. For the sake of people, how Srila Prabhupada brought these teachings, which even great scholars would find very difficult to understand, and presented it to people who'd never even heard of Krishna. And Prabhupada gave that. That was his great gift. How he understood the teaching. First of all, even to understand those teachings, and then present them to the world without any compromise, without any lessening, and so that people could actually get the result. It's not simply an intellectual activity, but the result of actually surrendering to Krishna. So in this way, Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vedanta, they are non-different, although apparently very different. Their style of presentation is in many ways different. Now, how did Srila Prabhupada do this? How did he come to the West and establish Krishna consciousness? Sitting here in 2011, it may be difficult for us to understand exactly what Srila Prabhupada did. He came to the West. Now we see in the West it's an ordinary thing. It seems to us very ordinary that there are devotees, there are temples, there's discussion of Bhagavad Gita as it is. We take it, because it's there, we take it for granted. But when it wasn't there, it didn't seem possible that it could be there. No one encouraged Prabhupada to go to the West. They thought, well, what's he doing? What's this strange idea? He came and retired in Vrindavan like so many elderly Bengali Vaishnavas, and now he's got this idea to go to the West. What a strange idea. Why should he do it? He wants to preach in the West? What a silly idea. Even in India people aren't interested, then how is anyone going to be interested in the West? They have no idea about all these things. They're so fallen. There's no possible. It just seemed like a wild, crazy idea. What is this idea he's got to go and preach in the West? And it wasn't possible to preach Krishna consciousness in the West. And what Srila Prabhupada went through to get even a few people in the West chanting Hare Krishna and even beginning to understand this philosophy, we can hardly understand. How did Prabhupada do it? Well, great faith in the holy name of Krishna, no doubt. We could say that Prabhupada was sent by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Great faith in the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tremendous determination, tremendous patience, tolerance. But Srila Prabhupada himself ascribed his success in doing this to one factor only, that he had faith in the words of his spiritual master. All the qualities that Prabhupada manifested to spread Krishna consciousness, to establish it in the Western world, Srila Prabhupada said, it's because I had faith in my spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada was once discussing How is it that this has happened to me? I had so many qualified godbrothers, and certainly Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had many highly qualified godbrothers, very learned, very austere. Then how did this wonderful mercy happen to me, Srila Prabhupada said? And we said, when I analyze, I can see that only I had complete faith in my spiritual master. So this point, Srila Prabhupada himself emphasized again and again and again, that Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aikya Anakariha Mone Asha. That the words from the mouth of the Guru, Lotus, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, this words from the lotus mouth of the Guru, Chitete Koriya Aikya, making them one with the heart. In other words, having no other desire. One who has no other desire, who doesn't identify himself in any other way but as the instrument of his spiritual master, then he becomes one with his spiritual master. He attains the same potency because he is one who is one with the words of his spiritual master, becomes non-different. Because what is the Guru? The Guru is teaching by his words. So one who accepts those words within his heart, and there's nothing in his heart but the words of his Guru, then he becomes qualitatively non-different. And what does he speak? What does a pure devotee of Krishna speak? He doesn't speak from the mental platform. He doesn't speak from the emotional platform. He doesn't speak from the intellectual platform. He speaks from his heart. Now we've heard this so many times, speaking from your heart. But what is in everyone's heart? Kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsa. I listen to my heart. A very bad idea. If the heart is full of kam, all the bad things, this material desire, anger, greed, illusion, envy, kam, krodh, lobh, and greed. Did I say all of them? Kam, krodh, lobh, moha, illusion. Then this, my heart, I feel in my heart. Don't feel. Listen to Guru and be guided. But when the heart is one with Guru, when the heart is one, then there's no other desire than to serve Krishna. Then you follow your heart. Because the heart becomes sadhunam hridayam tvaham, sadhunam hridayam tvaham, madanyate na jananti naham tebhyo managapi. Krishna says, the sadhus, and here he's not talking about anyone with a long beard who wanders around talking all Mayavad nonsense. Sadhu means devotee of Krishna. That is my heart, Krishna says. And the devotees, I am their heart, because they know nothing but me and I know nothing but them. So, this was Srila Prabhupada, in his own words, this was his qualification. That he had nothing in his heart but the words of his Guru and the desire to serve his Guru. And that, from that, all qualifications will come. And this was the point which Srila Prabhupada stressed again and again and again. And actually, for us, we need that more than others who may have some qualifications to start. When I say we, I mean Srila Prabhupada was speaking to us in the Western world who had no prior qualification. At least in India, people, at least previously, had some qualification. They were raised in Vedic culture. They would know, as Srila Prabhupada, he was raised in Vedic culture. He would know the stories of Mahabharata and Ramayana, have some basic faith in Krishna, but we knew nothing. And whatever we knew, whatever education we'd had, was all obstacles to bhakti. Not only did we not know anything, but we were in the minus position. We were addicted to all activities that were totally sinful. We were totally absolutely not even fit to be even considered as a candidate for devotional service. and all the ideas that we had had, all the so-called education, all simply obstacles to bhakti. All wrong, everything wrong idea. Not only no qualification, but many, many disqualifications. Actually, just all disqualifications. So Srila Prabhupada stressed this, that you simply have faith in Guru. And of course, Prabhupada was the Guru of all the devotees at that time. So that is the fact. If we simply have faith in Srila Prabhupada, then our life will be perfect in all respects. But that faith, it's not like in Christianity they say, well, you just believe. A Christian is called a believer. But Srila Prabhupada was a teacher. We have faith that what he teaches is correct. Okay, I'll tell you something that Srila Prabhupada taught several times. When the class is going on and the deity curtains close, don't bow down. Go on listening. Because that hearing is important. Don't obstruct the flow of hearing. It's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so strong on this point. Hear Harikatha. One time he said that someone wanted to leave when he was speaking Harikatha, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, even if you tell me that your only son is on his deathbed, he's about to die, I will still say, don't go. Stay here and hear Harikatha. It's more important. We can understand what is the importance of that. So Srila Prabhupada, he achieved all success by his firm faith in his Guru. But how did that faith come about? We should have faith in Guru. That is a principle of Vedic culture. But why have faith in Guru? Because he is connected with Krishna. Guru, who is Guru? Actually, Guru is Krishna. Krishna is the Guru because he gives knowledge. So one who represents Krishna in all respects, he is Guru. So Srila Prabhupada had firm faith in Guru. And how did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur get that power? Because he had complete faith in his Guru. Srila Prabhupada from the very beginning attracted the attention of Saraswati Thakur. When Prabhupada came for initiation, Saraswati Thakur said, yes, I have noted him. He is fit for initiation because he likes to hear. He doesn't go away. Saraswati Thakur had noted that. Abhay, as he was known at that time, was surprised that how had Saraswati Thakur noticed him when Saraswati Thakur had so many disciples. And Abhay had only been a few times in the presence of Saraswati Thakur. He would come, just like so many people may come here, and listen. Now, if I speak something here, and there's so many people I haven't seen here before, and after a few years, this person is introduced to me, and he says, oh yes, I remember. You'd be surprised. Oh, how do you remember? Yes. I sat, and he only saw me one time in a group of people, and then no words were exchanged, and we didn't see again after a few years. It might be expected that Abhay would remember Saraswati Thakur, but not that Saraswati Thakur would remember him. He says, yes, I have noted him. And how is that? Because he likes to hear. Saraswati Thakur noted that he liked to hear. He sat and listened to the lecture, which not many people would like to sit and listen, because his talks were long and very scholarly, difficult to understand. Not everyone liked to sit and listen, but Saraswati Thakur noted, yes, he likes to hear. He immediately gained the goodwill of his guru by liking to hear. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his main mission in the world or activity in the world was to speak Harikatha. So he liked people will listen, they will hear. So he attracted the attention of his guru by that, and later he submitted a poem in English, or Vyasa, it was actually a Vyasa Puja offering, which attracted the attention of Sarasvati Thakur so much that one stanza, one verse in that particularly attracted Sarasvati Thakur. And he would show that to many visitors, that Prabhupada, as we now know him, wrote in his poem about Sarasvati Thakur, that absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, impersonal calamity thou hast removed. So Sarasvati Thakur noted that by stating this, this Abhay had captured the essence of his very being, that he hated Mayavad, that he wanted to establish absolute is sentient, the supreme personality of Godhead. The absolute truth is not impersonal, nebulous, indefinable, anama, arupa, nirguna. He has unlimited names, unlimited qualities, unlimited potencies. He is the supreme person. So actually all Vaishnava acharyas, those who preach, they all preach against this impersonal Mayavad, Advaitavad, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya. They all preach very strongly. They did not tolerate they did not give any room to this idea that the ultimate is ultimately impersonal. He is the supreme person. So we see that Srila Prabhupada also imbibed, he recognized this in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he himself took that up very strongly in his pranam mantra, which he composed for himself, in being his disciples being incapable at that time. And he wanted them to know what is his mission. Nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarna. He is uplifting the Western countries which are pervaded with this impersonalism and voidism. So that would be a whole study in itself, how Srila Prabhupada kicked out from, in his teachings, he was so strongly against this impersonalism and voidism. He imbibed that from his guru. There are many devotees of Krishna in India, and many people, they like to hear about Lala, and now there's this little Krishna. What is that? Vrindavan Kadulara, something like, comes on the screen. You can watch that for millions of years. You'll never understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that the Absolute Truth is sentient. Some nice story maybe. So there are many people who are attracted to Krishna, and that is their good fortune. But they won't understand the teachings of Bhagavata, that who is this Krishna? He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And mostly because this impersonal philosophy is so much preached that even people who superficially practice bhakti, they're all infected. Actually, if unless there's this very clear delineation of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he is not insentient, that the Krishna doesn't come from Om, Krishna doesn't come from any, Krishna doesn't come from anything. Everything comes from Krishna. Unless this is very clearly presented, then the influence of this impersonalism, even people who appear to be great devotees, all infected by this. If we're not actively preaching against this wrong idea, if we give any corner, even an inch, even a nanometer, to this Mayavad, then we'll be infected by it. Because that is our disease. We're all infected by the disease of not accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's, we can see Srila Prabhupada as the ideal disciple in taking this mood and fighting against this Mayavad. There are so many points, actually. Srila Prabhupada took from his guru the instruction, if you ever get money, print books. And this instruction that was given in the mat at Radhakund, this became the cornerstone of Srila Prabhupada's service to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the cornerstone of the preaching of Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Is based on books. Produce books, distribute books. And that, because that was Prabhupada's, he took that order from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and he transmitted that to his disciples. Everything should be based on books. Gita, Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, especially these books. So that instruction came from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada said, I follow my guru blindly. He told me to produce books, I'm doing it. So this distribution, production and distribution of books, this Prabhupada said also that I got the general idea of bhakti from my father. But particularly this point of book distribution, I got from my spiritual master. So what a difference that made, huh? That one, those few words that Saraswati Thakur spoke to him, that changed the whole destiny of mankind. Because this movement is meant to change the destiny of mankind. This Hare Krishna movement is not meant to be just for a few people coming. It's meant to change, Srila Prabhupada said, this movement will go down in history for having saved mankind in its darkest hour. It's not meant to be just a little Hindu sect. It's meant to change the world. It has the potency to do so because it is reality. It's not just some belief, but it is reality. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world to bring the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that Nama Rupe, Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar, Nam Hoite Hoi Sarva Jagata Anishta. People ask, in Kali Yuga it's so bad, and Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shujamyaham. Many Hindu, if anyone's a little bit Hinduish, Hindus, they learn this one verse. And they say, yes, I also know Bhagavad Gita, one verse. So whenever there's a decline in dharma and an upsurge of adharma, Krishna says, I come. So where is he? The Kali Yuga is so bad. Then, Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In Kali Yuga, Krishna has descended as Krishna Nama, in the form of his name. And Nam Hoite Hoi, from the holy name of Krishna, Sarva Jagata Nishta, the whole universe can be saved, will be saved. So this movement is meant for that, and the medium of, the main medium for changing the consciousness of the world and bringing people to Krishna consciousness and saving them from Mayavad, impersonalism, gross materialism, atheism, is by the medium of the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books, in which every drop of ink is Bhakti Siddhanta. As Bhakti Siddhanta was full of Bhakti Vinod, Bhakti Vedanta is full of Bhakti Siddhanta. So we should all be full of Bhakti Vedanta by studying his books, reading his books, and not just academically. Of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted Bhakti Shastri courses, and then what's the next one? Bhakti Vaibhav. But it's not meant to be just you write your exam, you become a Bhakti Shastri. But Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chite Te Koriya Aikya. It's not just something we get at, now I'm a Bhakti Shastri. But real Bhakti Shastri, we will see if our heart is one with that instruction. And it's a challenge, because everything Srila Prabhupada said, it goes against everything that we've been raised by in the modern demoniac age. Srila Prabhupada didn't teach us live comfortably in this world, be happy. He taught, as Krishna teaches, this world is miserable. Dukhalayam ashashvatam. It's miserable, and even if you think you're happy, you're not going to stay. So he taught practically everything Srila Prabhupada teaches goes against the sensibility of modern man. And in those days, Srila Prabhupada taught United Nations a bunch of barking dogs. In those days, people thought United Nations, very good, you see, it's stopping wars. Prabhupada said a bunch of barking dogs. Women's liberation movement, it said cheating the women. The men are cheating the women to have free sex. Women can never be equal to men. Prabhupada told these things. All the women feeling offended. Well, he also taught that we're not the body. If you think you're a woman, then you're in trouble. If you think you're a man, you're in trouble. We're not the body. They never went to the moon. It's all a hoax. Nowadays, many people think that. At that time, no one could imagine saying such a thing. Prabhupada said that. So, what? Then the society should be divided. Not all one man, one vote. Not democracy. Prabhupada said, demon crazy. Crazy demons. The society should be divided into first class man, second class man, third class man, fourth class man. People hear this, they think, oh, this is very bad. We're all the same. But no. So Srila Prabhupada's teachings, if we are to accept them, they're not very easy to accept if we want to remain in mundane consciousness. And that's the whole point. They're meant to bring us out of mundane consciousness, not in the way of Zen koans. You know that? They say something like the sound of one hand clapping, and you're supposed to meditate on it, and your whole system goes out, and then you become enlightened. It's some bogus idea. So it's not that Prabhupada was talking all that what he said challenged our way of thinking in the way that a Zen koan does, which is just nonsense, actually. But because it's complete sense, and we are all nonsense, therefore it challenges us. It challenges us to understand what is actually true, what is actual reality, what is the actual perspective on everything. One of our devotees in India, he made a book on the upcoming oil crisis. On every page there's a quote from Srila Prabhupada. He gave it to the chief minister of Andhra Pradesh, who died in a helicopter crash last year, I believe. It's Y.R. Reddy. So he gave that book to him, and this man knew nothing about Prabhupada. And he was reading, he said, oh, these quotes, this Swami Bhaktivedanta, he says so many good things. Was he an oil engineer? You see, in every sphere, Prabhupada gave perfect advice. So that even someone can think he's an oil engineer. Because he spoke about how the oil, taking the oil out, creates an imbalance in the earth. So many points Srila Prabhupada gave. So what can we learn? Well, we're supposed to follow in the footsteps. They're both Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivedanta. They're such great personalities that we cannot imagine to come to that level. At the same time, they call us to come to that level. That's why they come to this world, to pull us up. Srila Prabhupada would often say, what is the difficulty? And he made it appear very easy. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he lived and spoke in such a way that he showed the ideal, and it might have seemed very difficult for his disciples to come up to that level. It was like he was saying, come up, come up, come up to this level. But Srila Prabhupada's method was more like, Krishna consciousness is very easy, it's very nice. Come and take our hand, just hold on, just come with me. So both were presenting Krishna consciousness, but Srila Prabhupada made it appear very easy and natural, which it actually is, but then Prabhupada would say that, yes, well, you have to give up sense gratification. And that, for us, may seem very difficult. But he provided us Krishna-conscious gratification. Be happy. Srila Prabhupada would often say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. You like to eat nice food? All right, here you have. How did so many people become devotees in the Western world? How did Bhaktivedanta Swami do it? Well, there's one point which many people don't know about, how Prabhupada did it. It's a word beginning with H. Can anyone think what it is? Halava! That's right. How many people became devotees because they're attracted to Krishna, but the halava really got them. And halava means this in Gujarati they call shir, I think in Tamil also. They call what Prabhupada called halava is in most of India called kshira. So Prabhupada made that with lots of ghee, lots of sugar, and people would take it and they're not really sure about the philosophy and they can't really understand it, but they like the chanting, and that halava is worth coming back for again and again. Or even you can't leave because you eat so much of it. And many people, by taking it, they became purified. That was a major part of Prabhupada's preaching right from the beginning. Prabhupada would cook tremendous feasts of prasadam. Even today, we were staying with one. I was at midday with one Punjabi gentleman. So we brought. He took his meal, and we brought our own prasadam. And we gave them some of that. They said, oh, it's so good, it's so nice. Oh, it's, you could say it's just Indian food, but it's not just Indian food. It's Krishna's prasadam. And it makes a difference. It's not just ordinary food. So Srila Prabhupada, he took all this. It's all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Saraswati Thakur also. There's a feature of the Gauriya Math. Prasadam, feasts. Generally very simple, but prasadam feasts. So all these things, Prabhupada, he took from Bhaktisiddhanta. We should take from him. We should apply in our lives. And get their mercy. We may not come to their level, but in another sense we should. We have to go to the spiritual platform. They came to bring us up to that platform. And if we think we can't go there, then in one sense we're denying their whole mission. If we think that we can't go to Krishna, they're on such a high level, we can, we must. Otherwise, what did they come for? But how will we go? By their mercy only. By their mercy means follow their instructions. All right, this has been a rambling presentation. I'll finish it here because you all have to go to work tomorrow. We all have to go to Mangalarti tomorrow. And if you have any questions, I was told you're reading this book, Vishnu Gadha Prabhu. You read that? Sorry? Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava? Second time. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I can only say thank you to Prabhupada for engaging me in that. There are so many different services, and somehow I got engaged in this service. I had no idea it was going to be such a big book. I just started collecting some anecdotes in about 1985. I thought I'd just see some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, those who are alive, and collect some anecdotes. And somehow it started with that, and you know, I'd go and ask them about what did they see, what did he say to them. And it just grew from there. At some point I had to just publish it, otherwise it could still be growing. Yes, please. Since the departure of Srila Prabhupada, book distribution has been decreasing. Well, there are, if you see that in the Sankirtan newsletter, they have charts So the peak was 78, it seems to be. And it's gone through some ups and downs, but if you take the whole world, the book distribution now, it's going up every year.
Even in America. Maybe not here, but yeah. We've got traveling parties that will travel all over the country.
And in India, it's huge. And it's going... The movement has expanded a lot since Prabhupada left. Maybe not so much in America, but in many, even in Europe, there weren't nearly so many centers as there are now. In Europe, it expanded just after Prabhupada left. Many countries came up. In all of Eastern Europe, in India, I went to India to stay in 1977, and it was just considered only the useless people go to India because India is useless. That was the way it was thought. The preaching was very slow, but it was actually shortly after Prabhupada left that Indian people just started to join, and now it's tremendously growing, and there's a tremendous amount of book distribution. If you feel it's not going on enough here, well, you know, the books are here, the world's there, you're here, you know, put the things together. Be an acharya. Teach by example. Call over Vaisheshika. He'll get. Did he come here yet? Okay. He'll get all your. There's so many young, intelligent Indians coming over and becoming devotees here. So Vaisheshika Prabhu will teach you how to be a weekend warrior and bring Prabhupada's mercy to the people of this country. Yeah, please.
An instrument for Krishna, can you tell, if you don't mind my knowledge, what is the real instrument? Who is the real instrument?
Instrument of Krishna means one who places himself in that position to follow his order. They make an instrument of Krishna is one who makes the conscious decision that I will act as Krishna wants me to act, as Arjuna did. Practically, that means to become an instrument of the pure devotee who manifests the will of Krishna in this world.
I ask because what if someone, it appears that some people like the Bhakla, they want is preaching.
Preaching that can be misused for exploitation. Marx said that religion is the opium of the people. It can be misused. But the misuse doesn't mean that the real thing doesn't exist. Anything else? Yes, please. How Hiranyakashipu glorified Nrisimha more. Well, my understanding of this is that many people can praise Krishna as being supreme, but how will he demonstrate that? No one in the world could conquer Hiranyakashipu. Nrisimha came to this world, he's not from this world. Hiranyakashipu had so many boons that no one in this world could kill him. So Nrisimha came, he's not of this world. He's above everyone else. That was by killing Hiranyakashipu, Nrisimha demonstrated his superiority. Hiranyakashipu gave him a platform to do so. Actually, this rascal Mayavad, it has its use also, because by denying Krishna's superiority, it gives the chance to the Vaishnava, gives a platform for the Vaishnavas to establish very strongly that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Mayavad is simply rascaldom. So even that has its... Not that we say Mayavad is good, but that's all Krishna's... Krishna by... giving, allowing them to have some strength gives a platform by which the Vaishnavas can clearly delineate Krishna's Nam Rupa Guna Lila as being eternal and factual and not simply some imagination as the Mayavadis would have us believe. Yes. He went to Gorky Shodas Babaji to become a disciple, yes. No, I didn't say that, but that is a well-known anecdote, yes. That Gorky Shodas Babaji at first denied he would not give it. Saraswati Thakur was persistent, yeah. And eventually he gave it when he was satisfied. Did he have other disciples? Apparently so. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I was the only one. You can read all about it in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. Yeah, please take it. And when you've read all of Prabhupada's books several times, and you read this and then you'll really appreciate this. You can take the book now. Yes, please. Everyone was afraid of Hiranyakashipu? They prayed to Krishna for protection, yeah. Yeah. They remembered him. They remembered Krishna. So, shall we? Yeah, you have a question?
Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vedanta, can they be Bhakti without Siddhanta and Vedanta? Because there are people.
Can Bhakti be without Siddhanta? No. How can Bhakti be? It's like saying, a cow, a human being without a body. It's like intrinsic. Bhakti means Siddhanta. There's no bhakti without Siddhanta. Simply a feeling, that is not bhakti. Bhakti and Siddhanta they're two ways of saying the same thing. Two perspectives on the same reality. People who don't know Siddhanta and who don't have bhakti, they only can think that there can be bhakti without Siddhanta. If actually there's bhakti, then there must be Siddhanta. Siddhanta is anyabhilashita shunyam jnana kama adhyana vritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutama. Bhakti means without any extraneous desire, only for the satisfaction of Krishna. That is bhakti. If that bhakti is there, then that Siddhanta is exemplified in the bhakti. So Saraswati Thakur, this definition of bhakti was given by Rupa Goswami. But that's the definition based on all the Shastric understanding. And Saraswati Thakur was Rupa Anuga Viruddha Apasiddhanta Dvanta Hari. He was the remover of the darkness of all the wrong ideas which cover the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So that means he came to cover all the wrong ideas, to uncover all the wrong ideas which were going on in the name of bhakti. There are so many points. Then we have to discuss Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Adi, Pancharatra, Vidhingvina, Aikantaki, Hare, Bhakti, Utpata, Yaiva, Kalpate. These are all verses that Prabhupada quoted again and again. That so-called bhakti without reference to Shastra, which is not based on Shastra, is not bhakti at all. It's simply a disturbance in the name of bhakti. It makes people think that is bhakti, but it's not actual bhakti. So we should know very well what is bhakti by understanding Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Siddhanta. Alright, I'll finish there, as I say. You all have to go on. If you like to hear more, well, I have some DVDs. One has 400 lectures, one has 300 lectures, so you can listen. If you really like all this stuff, there's plenty more of it.